Hello and welcome to the PropTech Hot Seat on iProperty Radio with myself, Carol Tallon, the show where we explore trends and technologies driving innovation across the built environment. This show is brought to you in partnership with PropTech Ireland, the hub for innovators, investors, and indeed for industry leaders. Today, we've something a little bit different for you. I'm delighted to be joined by Paula Kennessy, Chairperson of AgTech Ireland and CEO of Terra Nutritech. Paula, you're very welcome. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks, Carl. Pleasure to be here.
So, Paula, normally we look at innovations and usually tech innovations that are driving innovation across the built environment. Today, we're looking at something a little different because I suspect there's a crossover that mightn't be immediately obvious, but with a focus on place and the rural place, I suspect we'll have some crossover. So AgTech Ireland, you're the chairperson there. Explain a little bit about AgTech Ireland. It's an association for agricultural technology businesses.
Exactly. It's I suppose AgTech is relatively new. We've an AgTech company, but we wouldn't have described ourselves as an AgTech company until probably 4 or 5 years ago, until it really became into the vernacular. Mm-hmm. So about 4 years ago, just in the February before COVID, I was reading an article about AgTech, and it was mentioning one or two very large corporations in Ireland that were driving AgTech. And I, being honest, I got a bit frustrated because, as with most innovation, it comes from smaller enterprises that are thinking outside of the box, being very adaptable and disruptive. And I kind of went, you know what? The smaller enterprises in the country, we don't have it. There's not a representative voice, I suppose, for AgTech. Nobody really knew where to go with this burgeoning industry. So I called up some of my peers, and about 10 days later, there was 12 of us in a room to discuss, do you know what, should we set up this group? And absolutely everybody had passion and drive to go, yes, this is needed in the industry. So everybody was sent away with a remit of go forward and multiply effectively, go find a few more companies and let's see, you know, what the real demand is. And 3 weeks later, we had 55 companies in a room.
That's amazing. Can you maybe tell us a little bit about your members, their spread, geographical spread, but also technology spread and focus?
Sure. So geographically, they're all around the country. The technology spread is everything from software to, I'll call it metal, you know, like milking machine manufacturers, nutrition companies like ourselves and others. You know, there's people using artificial intelligence, advanced sensors, and there's people with simpler, I'll call it technologies as well. I would define ag tech as anything that helps make a farmer more productive. Is ag tech. At one stage, a steam engine was cutting edge ag tech. So, you know, we have a very broad definition, I suppose, of productivity and what will enhance productivity on farm. And the size of the companies are everything from, you know, one or two man bands up to billion euro corporations in, you know, like Satirlaw and the likes of Alltech, our members. And indeed, our membership is growing all of the time as well.
And your membership, are they bootstrapped? Is there a funding mechanism for startups in this space?
I suppose we don't concentrate on the funding mechanism. We're really there to promote, enhance, and advocate for AgTech in Ireland. The funding mechanism, I suppose, has dried up as with a lot of other you know, mechanisms over the last couple of years. VC were heavily involved in AgTech because it was the cool new kid on the block. The pathway, I suppose, to commercialization for AgTech is much, much slower than a lot of other, you know, fintech or other techs out there, because it's farm by farm. It's a much higher cost of customer acquisition with AgTech compared to many other industries. And indeed, your customer is smaller. You know, your average spend by a customer is going to be smaller. So we have certainly seen VCs they haven't completely left, but they've taken a step back and take a few deep breaths before they invest in anything anymore. There's a lot more focus maybe on private equity, longer term viewpoint on investing in companies, which I think suits AgTech to a much better shape. We've companies though that are multi-generational too, that, you know, there's one of our companies, Pearson's Milking Parlors, they're 75 years on the go. And wouldn't have described themselves as an ag tech business up until, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, when really they started shifting and putting a lot of emphasis in technology in the parlor. So it's very, very different, really right across the board.
It's fascinating to hear, and I suppose I'm listening to your journey and maybe drawing parallels between that of the creation or establishment of PropTech Ireland back in 2015 or 2016. It's interesting. At that point, we were looking at anybody who had an idea to innovate across the built environment, and a lot of those maybe were people who were coming from, having had a transaction, whether it was buying, selling, renting a home, trying to lease a premises for business, and really being surprised at the poor service in the age of increasing digitalization. So they just, even without industry knowledge, assumed they could do better just given some of the very standard applications that were out there at the moment. And frankly, they weren't wrong. So the industry itself maybe was slow to drive innovation in the early days, but that has definitely changed. So actually, and now we're seeing most of the innovation across, particularly construction, but a lot of real estate as well, is driven by people who have a long, I suppose, who have deep domain knowledge and experience in the industry. Is that true for farming? Would most of the innovators be coming from either a farming background or certainly working in farming?
Without a shadow of a doubt, I think I'd put it in the high 90% that are definitely either were farming, maybe are currently farming, maybe it's hobby, maybe it's for actual proper financial gain, I'll call it, or they're one generation away. But yes, it's everybody has a love of farming. I think that are in the ag tech space. I only know of, I think, maybe two companies that there was absolutely no agricultural knowledge whatsoever. It came from university projects where they went, well, actually, do you know what? This technology could be transferred to the agricultural arena. And in fairness, both companies have set up really successful businesses. So there's also space for that because I suppose they weren't boxed in their thinking. They were able to expand an existing technology and use it in the agricultural space, which trying to articulate, I suppose, that true innovation really comes from outside the box thinking. And that's one of the reasons indeed AgTech Ireland was set up from a networking perspective, is to get companies together and discuss where the common problems are, where the common opportunities are, working together and indeed helping each other out where they can as well. So it's really important that, and I'm sure you see it in your own organization as well, getting people together fosters innovation in itself.
It absolutely does. And while I appreciate the name is almost in the title there, AgTech Ireland, is the focus solely on technology, or do you look at maybe innovative systems or innovative ways of doing things? Is technology always a factor?
It would be, yeah. Like, I suppose innovative systems or innovative ways of doing things, if it's non-commercial, that's where the likes of Chagas or UCD Lions Farm would come into play there. Really, all of our members are for profit, that they need to find their hook, their unique selling point in their technology. So a wider sort of systems play, we wouldn't see that in our organization. It's really people who are trying to commercialize products out there.
Well, I'm interested to talk to you about the pathway to commercialization that you spoke about there, but maybe just it would be helpful for me, maybe perhaps for others listening in, most of whom will have tuned in to learn about the built environment. The built environment across the rural might be something a bit different for them, but just so we understand it, can you explain maybe where we are in terms of digitalization and technology being used across agriculture globally?
It's really only starting to catch on now, with especially in Europe, with the drive for sustainability and not just environmental, social and economic also. That I keep saying it over and over, farmers can't work harder, they have to work smarter. And in order to work smarter, that's where technology comes in. So it's really only in the early stages. I think farming and the agricultural side is just going to see a huge change over the next decade and longer, and that farming practices will really be modernized. It's going to go away from sons learning from fathers who've learned from their fathers to tearing down their processes and going, well, how can we make this more efficient? How can I cut labor units out? Because like they're not available anymore. And how can I get the most out of more out of less, shall we call it? Because from a sustainability environmental side, farming has to change, but we still need to be able to produce the food that's needed for population out there.
It's really interesting to hear you kind of describe that shift from sons learning from farmer or from fathers to almost the other way around.
Yes.
And I would imagine there's a certain amount of resistance there as well. Then is that one of the challenges that your members would
It's one of
see?
the biggest challenges for adoption of tech on farms is the slow uptake of technology on farm, and that's due to the average age of farmers out there, are in their early to mid 60s. So just that in itself is slow. I had one member recently say to me one of the main reasons his business has been held back is a lot of his customers don't have smartphones. Now, I think the IFA would have done a study, and I think it was in the high 70s, really 80%. So it's not a minority, certainly, but most people would. But there's still probably a higher percentage of farmers than in society, we'll say, don't have smartphones. And indeed, even if they do, it's getting them to use them in using new apps or using new sensors or technologies. The National Broadband Rollout Scheme is going to be essential. I mean, that's still obviously, we're not there yet, but having proper communications available from farms is going to be essential for all the various technologies coming out as well.
And you touched on a couple of really important points. The broadband rollout, I think, is important for all of Ireland, just with a heavy emphasis on rural Ireland, but not just for the agricultural sector. We're seeing the rise in remote working and indeed hybrid working, and that's drawing more people back to the rural. And I think it's really interesting since COVID, there has been really for the first time, people can choose where they live. They're not tied to being within a 40 to 60 minute or whatever it is commute of the workplace. And I think what we saw increasingly there was that people were choosing rural Ireland, and that's really contrary to a lot of what the government policy might have predicted and would have been expecting. And indeed, it's causing a bit of tension now because actually what people are choosing is not in line with the development plan, and certainly not in line with our goals towards decarbonisation and otherwise. So it means that rural Ireland is facing a little bit of a battle to prove itself and to show how it can have a sustainable future. And agriculture has such a huge part to play in it. And that's why I do want to delve in a little deeper about the pathway to commercialization, because one of the things we saw, again, drawing parallels between prop tech and construction technology, is that when the innovation came from outside of the industry was very resistant to it. Even when it came from within the industry, you had your early adopters, but actually the real drivers that enabled this pathway to commercialization was the sustainability factor, the environmental factors, the targets that needed to be hit. So there were regulatory drivers and funding drivers. But given that agriculture is such a significant part of our global carbon emissions, we know there's huge body of work to be done to make agriculture sustainable. And to be fair, anybody who wants a future in agriculture would acknowledge that to a certain extent. But there's maybe a balance that has to be struck. So how is that not driving, your regulatory drivers, how is that not driving more technology, or what's the system there?
Put simply, farmers aren't being paid for it. And it's as simple as that. Farmers are already working on very, very tight margins. They cannot be expected to take up all of the slack for sustainability challenges. Unfortunately, at the moment, food is too cheap. It's going to have to be the end consumer is going to have to pay some of this. And obviously, your large supermarkets are pushing back against that heavily. It's only either with a carrot or stick that farmers will bring in some of these sustainability measures, because 2022 was a fantastic year for farming. Everybody made good money, and I think everyone would admit that 2023 was a disaster. Commodity prices were back, 40, 50%. Weather was terrible. Loads of things went against farmers, and many farmers made a loss. So if you in a company, and I would view farming as a company, are losing money, well, you can't bring in new innovations. You can't afford to spend money on them. So I think we need to square that circle first, that it has to be worthwhile for a farmer. But also, I've been asked questions in the past of I asked one question where it was phrased with airlines, data centers, and agriculture giving out all the emissions. What can we do? My answer was agriculture is not and cannot ever be in the same sentence as airlines or data centers. We can all certainly live without seven different copies of the same photograph floating around in the cloud. We wouldn't like it, but we could live without a foreign holiday. None of us can live without farming. It's our breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and that's what people need to understand. There will be emissions from farming. It needs to be done better and to the best of farmers' ability and industry's ability. But at the end of the day, we all need to eat, and I think that's something that's kind of pushed to the side with green agendas at times.
Borg, I absolutely agree with you on part of that, and part of that is we are utterly dependent as a human race on food, and therefore agriculture is utterly vital. However, we're talking about technology, and technology would not be enabled without our data centers. So actually, I believe that data centers are being really maligned actually in our national policy, where in actual fact, what we've seen is that not only are data centers vital for us to be able to continue our journey of digitalization and for the growth of the digital economy, but actually increasingly we're seeing that actually large energy users like data centers might actually be part of the solution to our renewables. So in fact, it was, I think it's well established now that one of the challenges in terms of Ireland moving towards increasing renewable energy is that actually our grid doesn't it doesn't it isn't designed to handle the intermittent nature of renewables generation. And in fact, to be able to align that properly, we need to make sure that we can store, and actually we need large energy users, which I think isn't something that's in the national conversation at the moment, but perhaps needs to be.
In fairness, there are another industry that's very easy to malign. And I do agree with you. I suppose I was being a bit facetious, really, with it. But it's we operate in an integrated economy, and we can't push any individual sector out of it. The same, indeed, even with airline travel. We live in an island. For proper commerce and proper industry, we need to get around. We can't all go on a boat if we want to go over to Berlin for a 2-hour meeting. More and more of these meetings are done via Zoom, obviously, but they're still, with any industry, sales are face to face. You can't sell over Zoom. And I would be old fashioned about that, but I think that it's a handshake and a smile and a body language gets you sales rather than anything else at the end of the day, and builds those relationships.
And I think that's actually one of the strengths that Irish startups have. And I think actually one of the other strengths that Irish startups have, irrespective of the sector, is that because Ireland is an island, the small country, small marketplace, our startups are geared towards export from the very early stages, as opposed to if you were in a larger market where you might by year 3 or year 5 or year 10 think about export and looking at international markets. In Ireland, if you're not looking towards that in year 1, you're not getting Enterprise Ireland
Absolutely.
supports anyway. But also you're not actually giving your startup the fair chance if you want it to be a large player, because we just don't have that kind of marketplace. In terms of your members, and I appreciate 55 members is a large number, so I'm sure they'll fall into many different buckets, but would many of your members be geared towards export or have that in their long-term plan?
Virtually all would have it in their plan. At the end of the day, Ireland's a small market. We like to think ourselves as major players in the world stage, but we're a small market here. So if you really want to grow, if you're outside, if you're not a service industry, and you're producing something, then you need to be looking abroad as well. I would view Ireland as it's a fantastic market to bed your product down, ensure everything is correct. You build a really sustainable business and then go abroad. I have seen companies trying to go abroad too quickly, and it's expensive to set up new markets internationally, because there's plenty of mistakes. No matter how much advice you get, you're going to make. Everything from cultural to language to, there's just so many, and we're seeing it in my own business here. We're expanding throughout Europe at the moment, and it's a slow process and it's an expensive process as well. And it takes a while, takes time to get it right, I suppose.
Yeah, and look, you're right. Exporting too early, making mistakes. They're expensive mistakes to make, and for many, if you do it at an early stage, your business may not be in a position to recover. However, when you talk about Ireland being a good, essentially a good market to get established in, I mean, is that the reality? Because I know I don't. I'm not happy to do it, but I've often had to sit down with a prop tech or construction technology provider and say, actually, Ireland isn't the right test market for you because we're not the, not only is it a small marketplace, but actually there is a bit of a resistance to change. There's a slow, a little bit like you said there, we like our sales to be done with a handshake. We don't tend to buy online, so actually, I'm not sure it is a great test market. I believe there are probably other test markets, and given maybe the disparate nature of a lot of small farms and individual farms as opposed to maybe very large holdings, would many of your members actually opt to test in other markets before coming back to supply the Irish market?
No is the simple answer to that. Like average size of herds here, about 100. You do have a cohort, probably about 20, 25% of farmers, of Irish farmers who are very progressive. And you kind of focus on them. They're the sector who are making higher returns than the rest. Because the market, the culture, the environment. It's for me, from an ag tech perspective, it's a natural market to get up and going, getting established and ironing out all those kinks. Like agricultural markets in other countries differ hugely. We do a lot of business in France. The average holding is two-thirds the size of Ireland. A lot more farms, but it's they're equally as slow, if not slower, to take up new technologies. Germany, the holdings will be much larger, but they're much more established. So they're operating for the last 20 or 30 years and they don't want to change anything. Whereas some of the newer markets, the likes of South America and stuff, they're newer holdings and they want to do things to the best of their ability, and they don't have any preconceived notions. But then again, one of those farms could be equal to Munster, so they're very, very difficult to get in with as well, because all the vultures are circling and they want to do business. Everybody wants to do business with the big farms.
Yeah, it's
So.
interesting. It's interesting to hear the different perspectives on different marketplaces. And I suppose that's the kind of thing the startups need to be able to figure out. But they also need the time and the space and the resourcing to be able to figure that stuff out because you can go broke very quickly in
They can.
startup stage. So I'm quite sure, like in any industry, most of your startups are still working around the clock in their day job. And this is something that they're doing alongside of it. Do you know, Padraig, I'm really happy that you mentioned, as we were talking about the environmental, the importance of understanding that it's not just the environmental drivers, that you have to be focused on maybe the social and economic conditions as well for the well-being of those involved in agriculture. From AgTech Ireland's perspective, and again, appreciate it's 55 members, that's 55 different set of interests essentially, but where you come together to agree on common challenges and things that you would like as an organization to achieve and maybe policy changes that you're pushing for, what's driving the ag tech agenda by your members?
So from a farmer's perspective, and that's really where it all starts, labor challenges is one of the big issues out there. Farmers have changed. Say the newer generation of farmers coming through, where it would have been probably acceptable for their fathers to work 90 hours a week, Saturdays and Sundays, and for them never to take a holiday. That's not acceptable anymore in a normal, in a normal marriage, we'll call it. And rightly so. So there's increasing challenges. I'll call it inside the front door. That means that practices do have to change on farms, and they need to make sure that they're being as efficient as possible and taking out a lot of those longer or menial tasks where they can. That's one of the biggest drivers at the moment for technology and technology adoption. Then after that, a lot of people are putting a lot of time and effort into the environmental side. The sales won't start coming from that for the next 3 or 4 years, to be honest with you. I think there's going to be panic around 2027, and I've said this to the government ministers. 2027, 2028, there's going to be panic in the country to try and hit some of these environmental targets. Some of the technology isn't even there yet. It's only still being developed or in test phase. So that's going to be another big challenge. But because of that, it's only the larger companies, because it's such a long time frame, it's only the larger companies that can afford to work in a 3 or 4 or 5 year non-revenue time frame. Smaller companies certainly can't. They'll be out of business well before that starts.
And in any other sector, you would go to your local enterprise board for supports. And I, you know, back in 2015, we saw that actually our local enterprise boards, our LEOs at the time, they didn't want to touch property. They definitely didn't want to touch construction. Now that has absolutely changed, thankfully. But it just wasn't on their agenda at all. It wasn't the type of businesses, it wasn't the sectors that they supported. For those who are innovating in the agriculture space, who can you turn to for supports, whether it's in terms of startup supports or early stage funding or really any access to state support?
So in fairness, the LEOs are fantastic, and we used them ourselves in our own business for many years, and then we moved to Enterprise Ireland as soon as we really started to look at that export focus. Both of those state agencies are excellent. The likes of UCD run a accelerator every year, where they bring probably the best 7 or 8 startups of that year together, give them mentoring, give them support, and give them publicity, which is a huge benefit as well. There's a lot of support inside of the industry as well. I know I frequently take calls from startups and just asking my opinion on stuff, or do you know what, you're a few years ahead of us on this in this timeline. What advice can you give me on where I'm doing and what I'm doing? And there's loads of that actually happens within the industry, which I'm a huge fan of, because I benefited from it from other industries, because I suppose we were one of the first ag tech companies, in the new age, we'll call it. So within the industry, people love to help and love to give out advice. Whether it's good advice or bad advice, that's another thing, but they certainly love to give out advice.
You know, I think the old adage is true. If you're looking for money, ask for advice. If you're looking for advice, ask for money. And I think, you know, that has generally been the case. And I think startups would agree with you that the quality of that can vary. But really, and I'm conscious of your time. Thank you so much for sharing so much of this with us. But I'd love to learn a little bit more about what it is that you're doing, and your journey in terms of getting ready for export and exploring international markets. So tell us a little about Terra Nutritech.
Sure. So Terra Nutritech, for in non-ag parlance, we've developed an espresso machine to put Barocca for cows into water. So that might
That's
help.
brilliant. That's brilliant. That's absolutely a brilliant tagline. In PropTech, everything is described as the Uber of, the Airbnb of, but the espresso machine, I love that.
We've effectively developed technologies to accurately put supplements into water or onto feed. And we've looked at the market a small bit differently, though. We've also developed the supplements as well. So we go in, we put technology on farm to do it right for the farmer, and then sell them the consumables as well. So it's effectively like a printer model we've developed. Bootstrapped the whole way, which was an interesting and hard journey at times. We got a sustainable business going, and grew it very slowly. There's about 20 of us now in the business. We've last year signed contracts with distributors in Germany and distributors in France. Units gone into Belgium, gone into Hungary, gone into Switzerland. I'm just focusing on Europe at the moment. We've had opportunities, to be honest, to begin conversations in other regions of the world, and I'm going no for the moment. I want to build a sustainable business and where make sure we don't take on too much too quickly. Develop our distributors, give them the time and resources that's actually needed, and build a really good long-term sustainable business. Because we bootstrapped, I suppose I don't have VCs breathing down my neck, with a 5-year exit plan, so we can afford to do it slowly and do it right. It's difficult in what we're doing, though, because we've hardware, software, and manufacturing all under the one roof. So you kind of have to become an expert in everything, as well as international cultural affairs as well when you're dealing internationally, because I've just noticed the difference in cultures between, say, our three main markets at the moment to be Ireland, France, and Germany. The difference in cultures when you're dealing with both farmers and distributors in each country is just phenomenal. And you really have to become aware of it very quickly and accept it. I try to fight it, say with Germany, and they like their I's dotted and their T's crossed, to a very high degree. And you have to accept it. You have to get that local knowledge, in-market local knowledge, and service them as a business, not try and service them what you think the business should be.
Yeah, and you know that's there's a lesson in that, not just for ag tech startups actually, but I think for anybody who's trying to bring a market along with them. And I, you know, anything that involves a pioneering approach or anything where you're trying to introduce innovation, where you're not replacing somebody, you're actually trying to change a way of doing things. There's an education and awareness piece that needs to go along with it. And unfortunately, it's the pioneers carry a lot of that. And sometimes it's not the pioneers who get to stay there and get the benefit of it. Sometimes it's the second and third and fourth in the marketplace that actually really get the benefit of that education piece. And that's where I think a concerted effort coming together, a collaboration that's actually raising awareness, not just of innovation across the sector and new and emerging technologies, but also the support that's needed on both sides. I know we've spoken about it for the members of AgTech Ireland, but even for your own company, Terra Nutritech, like what would be the enabling factors for you that you need in Ireland and to help, I suppose, smooth the transition into other jurisdictions?
To be honest, I'll put my hands up and say Enterprise Ireland has been excellent for us. They've given us both financial support and in-country support as well, which is equally as important at times. They've done introductions to people. They've been a sounding board at times. They've done background checks, I'll call it. Not unofficial ones, we'll say, just to see who we're dealing with. They've been absolutely phenomenal to deal with. And some people have negative experience, but I say every country is different and it does depend on your DA within the country, and how you engage with them indeed as well. But overall, I'd have to say Enterprise Ireland has been a huge, huge, huge help for us anyway.
Yeah, and look, I'm delighted to hear that. I think the state has really put a focus on innovation across all sectors, and I think Enterprise Ireland has been really well resourced to be able to help startups. So it's great to hear that feedback, and we very much welcome it. I suppose before we let you go, you might just give us a snapshot of some of your members through AgTech Ireland and some of the technologies you're working on. You know, give me a flavor of some of the technologies and some of the really kind of exciting innovations that your members are working on at the moment.
Sure. So one startup I've actually just raised finances recently would be Micron Agritech. So they've developed an immediate diagnostic tool for fluke and worm doses in cattle, because you only need to give it to the animals that actually have an issue that wasn't out there before. So it's a brilliant piece of technology. Like the Pearson's milking machines that I mentioned earlier, they've developed new technologies to actually body condition score cows to make sure that they're going to get exactly what they need. So you're talking about that individualization of nutrition in their instance. There's a number of companies working on methane additives and methane emissions, which that if we can crack that, there will be a big easy win in agriculture for that. You've got the likes of Herdwatch, who have a farm management software and actually are on an acquisition spree at the moment. They've bought another couple of companies, just recently launched in New Zealand, just re recently launched and acquired a company in the UK, recently launched in the US. So they're on a massive expansion, and it's brilliant to see a ag tech business from Ireland that just has global ambitions, and with what they're doing being so innovative, they really can make a big dent in the farm management software worldwide.
Very good. And I suppose, Padraig, finally, how are when AgTech innovators are looking at international markets. What's, I suppose, the reputation of those coming from agriculture and bringing that agriculture and technology together? How are they perceived outside of Ireland?
In the highest regard, to be honest. We've a world-class agricultural system, and we're now recognized as having a world-class technology infrastructure in Ireland as well. That's why, a lot of the 9 or is it 8 out of the 10, biggest tech companies in the world have their EMEA bases in Dublin. So when you combine both of them, it just leads to a natural progression of a world-class ag tech system. So we are perceived as really an outward-looking, forward-looking sector that is well received from everywhere, from New Zealand, say, who would be a comparative force in agriculture, and indeed who AgTech Ireland have worked very closely with AgTech NZ, to the Middle East, to the USA. We really are regarded very highly all around the world.
And Padraig, we wouldn't have nine out of 10 of some of the largest international companies if we didn't have good data centers. And in fact, actually, they won't be able to grow if we don't keep data centers. So, I mean, I think Ireland has a very strong legacy of farming, and I see the growth of digital farming. And I'm not sure that those two are as far removed as maybe we think they are at the moment. And I think there's a really interesting proposition, particularly for the west of Ireland and the west coast of Ireland, to combine those needs for really, something that could be truly beneficial for kind of the environmental, social, and
I'd agree.
economic factors of the west of Ireland. So I think we're in an interesting time at the moment.
Yeah, and I think AD plants, for example, will be a natural progression in the Irish energy sector. That will naturally lead on to feeding some of the data centers there, from a prop tech point of view as well. So yeah, I absolutely agree with that.
Interesting times. Padraig, thank you so much for taking us through that again. For anybody who was tuning in, expecting to learn just about innovations across property and technology and across the built environment, I think looking at agriculture, we can see that there is a natural crossover there. And I think Ireland is really well positioned to do something that maybe hasn't been done in other countries. And it could give us a real leadership position in terms of bringing together our rural area, our renewables, and with an eye on the future digital economy. So interesting times. And Padraig, I really appreciate you taking us through that, and very best of luck to your members. And I hope to touch base and see how they're progressing with their journeys. But that's all we've time for today. Thank you for joining us. That was Padraig Hennessy, Chairperson at AgTech Ireland and CEO of Terra Nutritech. Also, my thanks to show producer Katie Tallon and to the audio team at Hear Me Roar Media. Before we go, just a special word of thanks to our sponsor, PropTech Ireland, for supporting the podcast and making these conversations possible. And of course, thank you indeed for tuning in. We'll catch you on the next episode of the PropTech Hot Seat. In the meantime, please be sure to check out all of the other Irish and international real estate and construction shows here on iPropertyRadio.com.